This is a CBS News special report, the swearing-in of Nelson Rockefeller as Vice President of the United States. I'm Bruce Morton. CBS News in Washington. And what you're hearing for the first time ever on radio is sound from the chamber of the Senate of the United States, where the President of the Senate pro tempore,
a message from the House of Representatives,
James Eastland of Mississippi, is gaveling the Senate to order.
Mr. Secretary.
Message from the House of Representatives.
Mr. President.
Mr. Secretary.
I am directed by the House to inform the Senate that the House has adopted House Resolution 1511, confirming the nomination of Nelson A. Rockefeller of the State of New York to be Vice President of the United States.
President.
Senator from West Virginia.
President, I ask unanimous consent that the chair be authorized to appoint a committee to escort the President of the United States and the Vice President designate of the United States into the Senate chamber.
That's the voice of the Senate Democratic Whip, Robert Byrd of West Virginia.
As a committee to escort the President of the United States and the Vice President of the United States into the Senate chamber.
Eastland again.
The Senator from West Virginia, Mr. Robert Byrd. The Senator from Pennsylvania, Mr. Scott. The Senator from Nevada, Mr. Cannon. The Senator from Kentucky, Mr. Cook. And the Senators from New York, Mr. Javits and Mr. Buckley.
The New York senators are there, of course, because that's Nelson Rockefeller's home state. Cannon of Nevada and Cook of Kentucky were the Democratic chairman and the ranking Republican on the Senate Rules Committee, which held
the
hearings in the Senate on the Rockefeller nomination.
Mr. Griffin.
Senator from Utah, Mr. Moss.
Senator from Utah, Mr. Moss.
That, again, is the voice of James Eastland of Mississippi, who is the Senate's president pro tempore. The committee he's just named is leaving the Senate now. This is all the result of a vote which took place just a little under 2 hours ago in the House. The Senate had voted earlier, 90-7, to confirm Governor Rockefeller as Vice President. The House voted this evening, 287 for, 128 against. One member voting present, that was Charles Diggs of Michigan, a Democrat. No explanation for that. His office is not answering the telephone, and we don't know why he decided that present was better than either yes or no. We do have, from CBS Research, a little information on some of the states and how they voted on the Rockefeller nomination, how their congressional delegations did. Rockefeller lost California, 21 no and 20 aye.
Speaker of order, please.
Split Ohio, 11 no, 11 yes.
Speaker of the House of Representatives and the joint bipartisan leadership.
That's the voice of Stanley Kimmett, who is a secretary to the Democratic majority in the Senate. And what he's saying is that the House delegation is here, led by Speaker Carl Albert. Just behind him, the majority leader, Tip O'Neill of Massachusetts, the Democratic whip, John McCall, Judiciary Committee Chairman Peter Rodino, then the Republican leader, John Rhodes, Republican whip, Leslie Ahrens, Republican Conference Chairman John Anderson, and the ranking Republican on that Judiciary Committee, Ev Hutchinson of Michigan. They're all coming down the center aisle now in the Senate chamber. That's a much smaller arena than the room they're used to working with in the House.
Gentlemen, you are welcome to the Senate.
That's Senator Eastland offering some Southern hospitality. The House members are now sitting in chairs which have been wheeled out in front of the first row of the Senate desk. The front row is normally occupied by the senior members. The majority leader, Mike Mansfield, has the lead desk, so to speak, on the Democratic side. And the Republican leader, Hugh Scott, on the other side. The House members are now sitting in chairs just in front of those desks, being glowered at by President Pro Tem Eastland, who I think, in fact, is probably trying to look cheerful. And there's a certain amount of hubbub, to-ing and fro-ing, which is normal. The next entrance, if the little program we have here is correct, will be that of Warren Burger, the Chief Justice. Stanley Kimmett is expected to announce him, and Chief Justice Burger will be the one who, in fact, administers the oath to Governor Rockefeller. The governor, we're told, will use...
Mr. Secretary.
The Chief Justice of the United States.
And they're all standing now. The senators all rising as Chief Justice Burger comes down the center aisle. The other House members, those not on that official committee, are jammed into the back of the Senate chamber, and they're standing up. There are no chairs for them. The Chief Justice gets a standing ovation, and the next arrival undoubtedly will, too, because that's the President, Gerald Ford. And he, as you know, is a very popular figure here on Capitol Hill. He has a lot of old friends in the Congress. I started to say before that Governor Rockefeller, we're told, will use the same Bible to take this oath that he used four times in Albany, New York, to take the oath as governor of the state of New York. And the Bible carries a note by John D. Rockefeller, Jr., which says, "This was my mother's Bible, which always lay on the table in the library at 4 West 54th Street, New York." Note dated April 1st, 1946. It's the English version of the Polyglot Bible, published by Samuel Baxter & Sons of London. The vote, as I said, in the House was about 2 hours ago, and most of the no votes came from just 12 states. I mentioned California, which Rockefeller lost, and Ohio, which he split. He did fairly well in his home state of New York, 26 aye and 10 no. Florida was pretty even, 8 yes and 7 no. Michigan, 11 aye and 7 no. Texas, 10 to 6. Rockefeller lost Georgia, 6 to 4.
President of the United States.
Here comes President Ford, led into the Senate chamber through a back way, not coming down that main center aisle, by the Assistant Sergeant-at-Arms Robert Huff, and followed by the Republican leader, Hugh Scott, Senator Byrd, a crowd of other senators. And the Senate is giving the President, as everyone knew it would, a standing ovation. Mr. Ford now has gone over to shake hands with the Senate's President pro tem, Senator Eastland, and with some of the staff. His lips are moving, and he's saying things like thank you, although we can't hear him. Mrs. Ford is there, smiling at this reception.
They got to bring him in here.
Mr. Eastland has made them all be quiet now. Mm-hmm. The President is seated, the Senate is hushed, and the next arrival is the man of the hour.
The chair now appoints the Chief Justice of the United States to administer the oath in my behalf to the Vice President of the United States.
Little problem with that. The Vice President designate is not here yet, but we expect to see him any minute. The Chief Justice is up, shaking hands with President Ford, and we assume that that escort committee Senator Eastland named a while ago is out there somewhere rounding up Governor Rockefeller. We see Mrs. Rockefeller and some other members of the family there, along with Abril Harriman, another former governor of New York, and they are all looking around as if to say, where's he gone to? A question I should add to which we have no answer, but he should be walking into the Senate chamber at any moment. And the ceremony itself is supposed to be quite short. The oath doesn't take long, and then Vice President Rockefeller will make, we're told, about a 5-minute speech. President Ford, as far as we know, is not expected to say anything, though if he wants to, the microphones are there and the Senate will certainly not stand in his way.
Let's have order. Mr. Secretary.
The President, the Vice President designate of the United States.
And to the night's third standing ovation, again led by the Assistant Sergeant at Arms, Robert Huff, here comes the Vice President designate, Nelson Rockefeller.
That's
Rockefeller is standing, not quite smiling, with a sort of grim, triumphant look, I suppose one could say. It's been a long haul, this nomination. It's taken about 4 months.
Senator, come to order.
Nelson, glad to see you.
Eastland to Rockefeller.
Raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller.
I, Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
The duties of the office.
The duties of the office.
On which I am about to enter.
On which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
And in the Senate chamber, which is packed with senators, members of the House, members of the Cabinet, everyone once again is standing and applauding. Vice President Rockefeller, no longer a designate, is now getting ready to sign the official oath, sign the book. Doing it with a ballpoint pen, which will be a valuable souvenir for somebody, probably the Vice President himself. And now Chief Justice Burger leans over to affix his signature and make the whole transaction official. They're using one pen apiece. This is not like presidential bill signings where two or three dozen pens are often used so that all the people who had something to do with getting the bill passed can have one as a souvenir. Chief Justice is hesitating. He may maybe try to remember what the date is.
Senate, come to order. The Senate of West Virginia is recognized.
Democratic Whip Robert Byrd.
Consent that the Vice President of the United States be permitted to address the Senate at this time.
Without objection, so ordered.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, President Pro Tem Eastland, Mr. Chief Justice, Your Excellencies, the member of the Diplomatic Corps, distinguished guests and fellow Americans. As I stand before you, I feel a great sense of humility. I feel a great sense of gratitude for the privilege of serving the country I love. I feel a deep sense of gratitude to President Ford, to the Congress of the United States, and to the people of America. To the President for his trust and confidence and the opportunity he has given me to serve this great nation in working with him. A man for whom I have profound respect, admiration, and warmth of affection. A man of integrity, sincerity, openness, dedication. A man bearing the lonely burdens of the presidency with deep human understanding and total devotion to his country. And my admiration to the First Lady, Betty Ford, and her great warmth and her courage. And if you'll forgive me for a personal note, my love and admiration to my own gallant wife, Happy. I feel deeply grateful to the committees and the members of the United States Senate and the House of Representatives for their confirmation of my nomination. Among the many reasons, I look forward with pride and with keen anticipation to serving the Senate as their presiding officer is the fact that my mother's father, my grandfather, Senator Nelson W. Aldrich, represented the great state of Rhode Island in this very chamber for 31 years after serving for 3 years in the House of Representatives. The thoroughness with which the Congress exercised its responsibilities on behalf of the American people under the 25th Amendment has been another dramatic evidence of the enduring strength and vitality of our Constitution and our unique American system. I've learned a great deal from this experience of the past 4 months. And I've come out of it with an even greater respect for the Congress of the United States, a more profound appreciation of the collective wisdom of the American people as expressed through the Congress, and a deeper understanding of the breadth of the responsibility to the people of this great free land that falls upon those of us in positions of public trust. I deeply appreciate the outstanding work of all those in government agencies involved in the investigation and preparation of material for the congressional committees. I admire and respect the vigilant coverage of the free American press, radio, and television through which the people of America were so well informed. I would like to thank all of those citizens who participated directly in the process by expressing themselves to their representatives in the Senate and in the House, and to those who sent words of encouragement to Happy and to me. And finally, especially to you, Mr. Chief Justice, my thanks for your administering the oath and symbolizing as you do the rule of law by which this great republic functions. This is a period in which our country faces tremendous difficulties and unprecedented problems, both at home and abroad. Problems that affect every section of our country and every family in America. But there is nothing wrong with America that Americans cannot right. I pledge myself to the fullest limit of my capacity to work with you, Mr. President, and the Congress in the great task of building the strength of America to meet the grave new problems which we confront as a nation and as a people. I thank you.